Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Welcome to part 2 of episode 51 of Why Are People Into That, the podcast that treats you like a human ATM. This month's guest is Lorelai Lee. In part 2, Lorelai and I discuss the health risks and rewards of picking up dollar bills with your pussy. Okay, New York City, there's still plenty of upcoming chances to see me in person. The Sex Expo is right here in Brooklyn on September 23rd, and I'm doing a very special crossover podcast recording there with Jacqueline Friedman, host of the Unscrewed podcast. Thank you to everyone who came out to the first edition of my new Why Are People Into That live series at the Pleasure Chest. It was a huge success, and the next one is going to be all about sexy monsters. That's October 5th with special guests Kristen Corvette, author of Witches, Sluts, Feminists, and Katie Skelly, author of My Pretty Vampire. Also on the Halloween theme, I'm teaching a class about fetish gear and other erotic attire. That is October 11th at the Pleasure Chest. Check back to tinahorn.net/live for updates and details on all of my events. Follow at tinahornsass on Twitter and Instagram. Say hi on Facebook, where I'm trying to lurk more often. And visit whyarepeopleintothat.com, which is undergoing some renovations right now. If you want the full episode guide to all 4 years of the show, the best place for that is going to be acast.com/YAPIT or on the Acast app. If you like Why Are People Into That, please consider voting with your dollars by pledging my Patreon. That is patreon.com/TINAHORN. Subscribe to this podcast on Acast and iTunes, and please take a few seconds to write a review and tell your friends about the show. It is so easy. You can just say something really brief and sweet, like what CrazyLegs27 did when they wrote, "This is the most thoughtful, intelligent, in-depth discussion of kink I've ever heard. Can't wait to binge the old episodes." 5 stars. It's that easy. So, scrub all your dirty money and hang it up on a clothesline to dry as you tune in to part 2 of Why Are People Into Cash? Is marriage institutionalized, socially approved, morally approved? Financial domination.
Hot takes, welcome. We can write 17
Ouch!
Essays.
Ooh,
about this.
The take is so hot.
Yeah. Oh, you want me to approach it from a feminist perspective? You want me to talk about queering of marriage? Like, you want me to talk about class dynamics and history of gender?
You said it, not me.
Like, literally, how many analyses can we put on this? Like, really, 1 million.
How much time you get?
Yeah. I can probably make arguments 17 ways. The point of me saying this is that I don't think there's a truth.
Sure.
But I don't think there's a true answer to this question. And I certainly don't think answering this question relies on thinking that you have a common common understanding of what marriage is, thinking that you and your reader share some, you know, assumptions about the dynamics within relationships or the dynamics within a marriage. Like, we can certainly put an analysis on it based on, like, a Donna Reed marriage or, like, you know, like, like this, what is this? This, like, ideal of marriage that's based on, like, 1950s television. But marriage has changed, like, endless times and ways through, like, the definition of what marriage is.
Throughout. No, there is one way to do it, and you have to do it that way. No, no.
Right? Honestly, no. Like, yeah, no, but...
It's kind of the... It is also the brain explodey progression, too, where it's like, marriage is one way, and then the brain lights up, and you're like, marriage can be other things, and then the brain explodes when you're like...
Their marriage is not anything, actually. I mean...
Slash everything.
Slash it is a very, very specifically defined relationship that the state is involved in. Slash it is a very specifically defined relationship by various churches. But, of course, even those... understandings of what marriage is like conflict with each other. Like that's the thing is that when people are like, you know, gay marriage hurts the straights, you're like, well, straight marriage hurts the straights. Like there's no straight marriage that is the version of straight marriage.
There's also people who say that gay marriage hurts the gays.
Yeah, oh, and I am one of those people actually. I could definitely get into that, but I won't. I won't, because that's not this podcast. That's not this hot take. But to try to keep on track with financial domination, I mean, I certainly think that there are probably people for whom that is an element of their relationship, an element of their perhaps married relationship.
Yeah. I mean, I think that it's a useful comparison for people who claim that they can't wrap their minds around the concept of financial domination, of, you know, expecting money for just being who you are. I mean, this is one way of putting it, or a satisfaction that two people might have where one person gives the other person money, and the turn on or the satisfaction that they get is from the transaction.
Mm-hmm.
That happens in marriages all the time. And in a way, for some people, marriages can be a way to sort of establish that that is what your expectations of your dynamic will be.
Well, I mean, I'm going to have to complicate that, because I think that in the 1950s understanding of heterosexual marriage,
American heterosexual
marriage, there isn't the same power dynamic that we're talking about when we talk about financial domination. The money is that's being handed over is like an allowance. It's like a like this money is unearned, or this money is in excess of your labor, or in excess of what the market claims your labor is worth. And that's, I think that's like the key, right? Is that this money is in excess of what the market tells you your value is, or the value of your labor is. And that's what makes it to me exciting, and to me breaking social rules. And so that doesn't necessarily happen in our traditional understanding of marriage.
Yeah.
True. But like, if we're looking for an allegory to like help people understand financial domination, perhaps one that is more accessible to people who haven't done sex work is working in the service industry.
Mm-hmm.
And that this happened for me many times, where someone leaves you a tip that is far in excess of what you expect.
Or what is socially expected.
What is socially expected, and what is considered the value of your labor. Like, and so the thrill that the person gets who's leaving that tip, I mean, again, it can take all kinds of forms, but let me tell you, I have done this as a many times, right? Same. As when I have the extra cash and I like get to hand it over to like a server or, you know, many different service industry situations.
Yeah.
I've done it where I've like put it in the bill and then left and like watched through the window because I hope that that's not like creepy, but
it's okay if it
maybe is. It is. Well, I mean, you know, I don't want to, it is creepy and maybe I shouldn't have done that, but I just really wanted to, I know the joy of receiving that money and I don't know what that person's situation is. I don't know whether they need it, how much they need it.
What kind of difference it will make.
What kind of difference it will make in their night. But I know, like, you know, this one specific time, like, seeing the joy on their face. Like, and also, you're not, like, handing it to them and waiting for them to show you that they truly appreciate how much, like that's another thing that people do, right? When you're working in service, they like,
right,
they're like, look at this money I'm giving you. I right. hope you see how cool I am for giving you all this big tip, you know?
Yeah.
And that is expecting something from you in that's exchange, right?
That's
right?
Right.
And that's why I left the restaurant this one time. Or like, I usually, when I leave a big tip, I don't like wait around to see the person's reaction. I only did it this one time. But yeah, that's the whole
maybe
point.
It would be creepy if you like called up the restaurant and you're like, hey, have you gotten any like big tips today? How did it make you feel?
Oh my God. I mean, it is a public place that you're standing outside of the window of, and maybe looking through the window of a public restaurant is not an unethical thing to do. I'm very have strong feelings about watching people when they don't know you're watching them.
Of course.
Even in public. Like, for me, that is, you know, something that feels really violent in many situations. But to get back to this, that's a feeling that I think is very similar to the feelings that go along with financial domination, is when there's no expectation attached
right
to the handing over of the money.
So how can people try it?
I mean, maybe we just said a way. No, I mean, you know, tipping your server is not the same as getting turned on necessarily.
True.
I can't speak for everybody, but to me, that's not the same. Well, although many of the thrills are similar.
And I also want to say that doing something because it gives you a thrill or turns you on is not necessarily like always a creepy thing to do if you know how to keep that thrill private. Mm-hmm. It, like, even if you are in public, mm-hmm. right? So if you know that leaving someone a little bit of extra money is going to give you that little like tingle,
mm-hmm.
I don't think that there's anything unconsensual or unethical about that unless you're like demanding to be seen by that person,
yeah.
You know, maybe like coming in all the time and then like expecting a certain kind of treatment.
Totally.
Or a certain kind of attention.
Yeah, totally. That's lame. Don't do that.
Don't do it.
I, you know, I'd be willing to hear arguments about that too. But I think you're right.
How can people try it?
Well, again, I don't know if this is something that is always sex work. I don't know.
Yeah. Well, I mean, okay. I mean, we talked about this already, but just because financial domination is a fetish that involves money mm-hmm. does not mean that the exercising of this fetish is always sex work or always involves sexual labor.
I mean, I think that's true. I think I'm just limited by the fact that everyone I know who has done this has have felt that it had some connection to sex work. Like, even the people I know who didn't necessarily identify as sex workers or do sex work on a regular basis.
But this is what I'm saying about marriage. Like, I'm imagining sort of an extreme, maybe not extreme, but sort of like a melodramatic scenario where you have a heterosexual married couple and the wife just like loves her furs and, you know, diamonds are her best friends and, you know, like wants, you know, extravagant gold plated fancy things, and her husband, you know, works in a fucking hedge fund or whatever and just has like way more money and like it has old money and is more money than he could possibly know what to do with, and they have a dynamic where like a very consensual, maybe even negotiated dynamic where like every moment it's like 24/7 DS essentially, where
lavishes her with gifts.
He lavishes her with gifts, sure. and she maybe she's like a domineering bitch about it and like puts out her hand and like expects her allowance. I mean, I'm just fantasizing.
Yeah, you're just writing a fantasy story.
Welcome. Yeah, I'm definitely, yeah, okay. So so is that relationship a relationship of sexual labor? You know, what is the difference between a marriage with this consensually mutually beneficially negotiated mm-hmm. fetish being indulged on the regular?
It just depends if they're turned on or not.
Yeah,
right.
But if they're turned on, it's not sex work.
No, I'm saying it's financial domination if they're,
but is it sex work? Is this fantasy scenario that I'm talking about, is it sex work? Because, you know, if people are married, then the sex work can't be happening between them. I'm just joking. That's right. Obviously not true.
Right. Yeah. Again, give me your hottest take. I can go either way on that. I don't have a, I'm not going to analyze this imaginary situation and say it is or it isn't.
Yeah.
It's too gray. You know, I think it would really depend on the dynamics between those people and. Cool. And the way they think about the things that they're doing.
Mm. Yeah. I'm sure there are a lot of people who are like that who don't think about any of this shit at all.
Oh, yeah. But that's also like, you know, we can talk about queer identity, right? Being in all kinds of words we use to describe our identities that are really dependent on who we're talking to.
Right.
And if you are living your life in a way that those words just don't make sense in terms of who you're trying to communicate with.
Right.
But the things you're doing maybe look very similar, or the ways that you think about yourself might even be very similar to people who are using a different kind of language to describe themselves. Like, you know, that's where the symbol breaks down.
Oh, shit.
What? You knew we'd get back there. The chairness of chair.
The chairness of chair.
Words only have meaning if other people understand them.
The furnace of furs. Oh, the Cadillac of Cadillacs.
Yeah, man. Okay, but we could also say, how can people try it?
Yeah.
Well, another thing people can try very easily at home is fucking cash fetish. I mean, get yourself some $1 bills. Like, literally, this is what makes it so exciting to me, is like, it is not about the amount of money either.
Right. That's really interesting.
It is like, actually, it's funny. You asked about coins. I have done this with coins. I have done this with like a jar full of coins, you know, of like rolling in it and shit. Like, that feels good.
Yeah. / gross.
I mean, I know it's dirty.
I'm so, so obviously very concerned about dirt. No.
There are many ways that I've done this, but coming home from work with a roll of cash has always been a big part of this for me. And then what I do with the money when I get home.
Yeah.
Putting it in my fucking makeup box, in my jewelry drawer.
Yeah.
And like throwing it in the air. Like
walking home with it in your boot,
which is dangerous,
yeah,
and feels dangerous,
yeah,
in a way that can be exciting.
when I was doing sex work and was still pretty poor, I would often take long bus rides home from a job with some cash in my backpack.
Yeah.
And I would like hold it.
Yeah.
On the way home, you know, and maybe that's sort of where this starts for me, is like being poor, getting paid in cash, knowing how fucking valuable that cash is to you, how much more valuable it is to you than it is to the person who gave it to you.
Yeah.
Having a fear of its being gone again, you know, that feeling of scarcity, giving it extra value. And so trying to fight against that feeling by throwing it around.
Right. I mean, this also reminds me of my conversation with Jenny Zhang, where we were talking about body fluids and like how many fetishes are around the idea that like socially you have to contain all of these secretions. Mm-hmm. And then if you have the chance to just like splooge them everywhere.
Yeah.
How satisfying that can be.
Yeah, totally. Totally. And there's something about, like, you know, rubbing cash up against my, like, Wet and Wild nail polish and, like, paste jewelry. Yeah, that's, like, where I'm, like, that's, like, some visceral thrill that I can't fully explain.
Yeah.
I mean.
So people can try cash fetishism. What happens when, if you have like $20 in ones,
and you objectify that cash,
what do you do with it?
Yeah.
If people have a domination and submissive power exchange, you could play games with cash where somebody actually, Princess Callie's book, Enough to Make You Blush, which we also talked about on the show. It's a book about erotic humiliation, and it has like a million suggestions for ways to play, which is great. And it wasn't that I was surprised to see a chapter on financial domination in there, but I just really appreciated the way that she framed it. And it doesn't always have to be about humiliation. Mm-hmm. Just like pegging doesn't always have to be about humiliation, but I loved her framework for that, and she has so many ingenious ideas of the way that cash can be a reward. It can be used as an element of withholding. It can be sort of like a weird, almost like a predicament bondage thing where you have to like get through something gross or disturbing or difficult to get to the cash. Oh man, I also am remembering one of my first clients who we called Jean the Spy. He was Canadian and he had this, I loved him because I love like anybody with like an elaborate role play, as you know. and he wanted to be, he basically wanted to be like the prisoner, like he was the spy, but like we were like the enemy and we had captured him. And so we had to like tie him up and like interrogate him and torture him to try to get information out of him. But the information was about where he had hidden, like the money stood in for like espionage intelligence.
Yeah.
Right. So he would like show up and then he would hide the session fee in like small increments all over the room.
Yeah.
And so then we would have to torture him until he revealed where something was hidden. And then we would go and like lift up, you know, like a leather hood or something. And there would be like $50 in there. Awesome. And then, and then we'd be like, this is only a part of the puzzle, like, and then how it came torturing him, which was fun. Although this is this like meta thing that like has always bothered me with sex work, where I guess I would have felt most comfortable in that scenario with something else standing in for the cash. Whereas obviously for him, the power that we have been talking about for the last hour, the cash as something more real outside of the fantasy made the fantasy more exciting or real to him. So if it had been fake cash or a prop that stood in for, you know, like a fucking Maltese Falcon or something like that, like, like it wouldn't have, he had incorporated it into the story. And I don't think it was one of those guys. I mean, sometimes guys want to do that because they want to pretend that they're not actually giving you money and they don't like that they don't actually have to pay for it. So yeah, that they, so sometimes there's something where it's like, they don't want to give you the envelope or they don't want to do it the way that you are telling them that the house says that you have to give them money right off the bat. Right. So,
because they are feeling like the handing over of the money is the handing over of a power that they're uncomfortable giving up.
Right.
Which is this feeling of entitlement to sex.
Women's bodies.
Yeah.
Time with women, attention from women.
I mean, we've both experienced this many different ways. Like, yeah, there's like a bachelor party game that we would play where like dudes all hide money on the body of the bachelor. Which has many layers. This game has many layers. Wow. And it can be very lighthearted. And I mean, to me, it's kind of boring. Just like,
how many blazes could it be hidden?
Really? It's like, it's going to be fucking, you know, in the waistband of his fucking underpants. Like, that's where it's going to be.
Yeah.
Just every time. Like, you're not
original. And you have to
original.
Be like,
yeah. I mean, really, the entire game, the, like, thing you have to do in this game, actually, is, like, how long can I, like, build up to the fact that I'm just going to take it out of your underpants? Like, that's where I'm, like, this is where I'm really earning this money in a way that is, like,
prolonging. It's edging. Because it's edging. It's financial domination edging.
And also, like, you better have put more than $5 in there.
Also, how probably part of it is, like, how long can I restrain myself from making a joke about finding it in your butthole? I mean, because that's the place to fucking hide it.
That is not where I would go with it at all.
Oh,
that's really funny.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. Hello Fresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. Hello Fresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
This September, the theme at the Pleasure Chest is Fall in Lust. To celebrate the beginning of warm, indoor, cuddly months, they're showcasing their incredible Pleasure Ed program. This month, as with every month, you can attend absolutely free workshops in New York City, Chicago, and Los Angeles. New Yorkers can check out Tantra for Beginners with Reed Mahalko Wednesday, September 20th, or How to Drive a Vulva with Allison Moon on Thursday, September 21st. Allison, Reed, and I will all be speaking at the Sex Expo in Brooklyn, September 23rd and 24th, along with Jacqueline Friedman and a host of other Pleasure Chest educators. Pleasure Chest workshops are always free, and attendees get 15% off anything they want to buy in the store that night. The full workshop lineup and so much more is available at www.pleasurechest.com.
There's this really beautiful burlesque piece by Dirty Martini where she pulls like a string of dollar bills out of her butt.
Awesome.
Yeah, and it's beautiful.
Okay, I'll allow that. Usually, I mean, dollar bills don't have a flared base, but, you know, in this case.
I don't think they're actually in her butthole. I think they're just like, but what do I know? I didn't see her prepare for it. I mean, it did kind of, but I never noticed that detail.
Yeah. Dirty Martini, if you're listening.
I know.
Actually, a great magician never reveals her tricks. So,
right. Yeah, that bachelor party game had those elements of like, what you're talking about, where you're like, who has the power here? And that's where it can be like really uncomfortable, really annoying, really.
But also those other guys have to like lift up their dude friends. Not jockstrap, of course. Oh man, Tina, there's where my brain is going. I'm in this. That's what everybody wears to bachelor parties, right? Is jockstraps.
Well, oh, and so oftentimes what would happen is like, you know, they'd like put the money on him, sit him in a chair. We'd like take that money. And the actually, so what's interesting about so many of these bachelor party games is that the thrill for them is in seeing him be uncomfortable.
Right.
And oftentimes it's like, this is a straight dude with a lot of traditional ideas about straight marriage, who is, you know, doing this kind of ceremony with many connotations of like traditional gender roles and
sure.
and all this stuff, and has this fear of like this need to be bad to align. Like there's like
right.
So often they're like playing with this line of, you know, ideas about cheating, and I don't know how they talk to their partners about that experience.
I mean, they usually I'm sure don't. It's
well, usually, I'm sure it's different for each of these people.
But I think I do think in a lot of situations, it's tacitly accepted or.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm not. I don't have enough experience.
Or it's like, but part of the scenario that you're describing is that he's like being forced. Like his guy friends are like, we got you this stripper. You can't say no. Oh, and now she's going to like be touching you. But you're like, oh, no, I'm like, you know.
Yeah, I mean, that's the line. That's the line that we're often playing with is like the guy friends often have a similar situation, not always, but many of the times that I've been in this circumstance, it's like the dudes are like, no, I have a girlfriend, like, don't touch me, like, pay attention to the bachelor. And the bachelor's like, I'm getting married tomorrow or next week. Like, I'm going to sit on my hands. I'm going to make this a story where I'm not an active participant.
Right.
And the guys are like, the guy friends are like putting the money on him, like while I'm there, they're like putting it on his body so that I will, you know, take it out of, it's not always in his underpants. Sometimes it's like in his shirt, you know,
yeah.
or like, and even just that amount of, touching is like uncomfortable. It's super weird. Bachelor parties are super weird. I mean, because they can also go the other way where there's like all kinds of entitlement happening. I've had that experience less frequently than
interesting.
This other experience. But
I want to know so much more about that.
Oh my God. I know. Should we talk bachelor parties? No. That's
why are people into bachelor parties?
I know. Don't ask me. I'm obviously just say it's kind of funny to talk to me about financial domination, too, because I am not a person who gives money in that way. Like, you, like really to understand the fetish, you would probably want to talk to people who are on the other side of it. Whereas mine is really the cash fetish, I think.
And I mean, but you were just describing a scenario of, did you get a sexual thrill? Do you get a sexual thrill when you leave extra tips for service industry
no,
people?
It's not, that's for me, that's definitely not about sex. That is, I'd say that there is a kind of thrill of breaking class boundaries, like of the fact that I have enough money to
right.
do this,
right?
Which is like a reversal of roles that I've played in my life, right? And that has something in common with the thrill I get when I'm taking money in a sexual context, but it is not the same and it is not sexual.
I mean, we both know that the wealthiest that generosity and wealth are inversely proportional.
Oh, there's all these studies about that.
I mean, anecdotally, I have found that.
Well, I mean, we can all say that working at the rich restaurant, the fucking rich part of town at the coffee shop, like you get way fewer tips
yeah.
than you do when you're serving working class people.
Yeah, that's what I mean.
Yeah.
So my last question is, do you feel that understanding the way that financial domination, you know, has sort of a fetish world around it, or a fetish lexicon around it, and also has a sex word, that that financial domination has a increasingly thriving sex work community, particularly online, around it, has made you better with money, or helped you to understand money or class better, or in a different way?
Yeah, these are different. You're now asking me very different questions, right? Being better with money is one thing. Understanding money is another thing. Understanding class is a third thing.
Yeah.
So that's a book that we'll hopefully we'll write someday together. But so if you just ask me whether participating in financial domination has made me better with money, I can very definitively tell you no.
Mm.
Because for me, the key part of financial domination is undoing the ideology that says there's a version of using money that's better than another version.
Right.
And that the version of the better with money version means accumulating it. And,
right.
You know, and spending it wisely,
right, or
like quote unquote wisely, in a way that maintains the you know, financial marketplace around you,
right,
while establishing your position in that marketplace. Like, all of that shit is so in opposition to the experience that I have when I'm participating in financial domination. That being said, like, when I got that $42,000, I fucking paid off my student loans.
Hell yeah.
So that's not being better with money, though. That's just having money.
You could have spent that money on a lot of different things.
Sure. And many times when I've gotten a chunk of cash. Oh, and I didn't spend it all on student loans. Like, let's be clear. I spent some on champagne and lip gloss.
Yeah.
You know, and fucking high heels and stockings and other things that give me thrills. But that's the thing, is that this idea is so ingrained in us that, like, if you're not paying your bills, it's because you're bad with money. And it's just like, no, it just means you don't have money. Like, rich people don't just spend all their money first on practical things, or people whose bills are paid off don't necessarily just spend all their money first on quote unquote practical things. They have enough money that they feel comfortable doing that, paying off those bills.
Yeah.
Whereas it's like, if you don't, this is what makes me insane about so much policy around, you know, food stamps and this kind of thing, like
welfare queens.
Well, I mean, like, let's not even go there, because that's a whole other thing to untangle. But I'm talking about, like, soda tax, or the idea that you shouldn't, that we should make it so food stamps can't be spent on candy.
Right.
And to me, that is saying that, like, if you're poor, you don't deserve pleasure.
Or that if, and that, like, also, wasn't it Paul Ryan that said that if people can afford iPhones, they can afford healthcare?
Right. I mean, that's a whole other thing of, like, total lack of understanding of what money means or how it can be used, or math. But also this very, like, condescending idea that poor people don't know how to spend their money correctly.
That they're lazy.
I mean, and you can even just, like, dissect this without even getting into this. There's 1,000 stereotypes, right?
Say they, like, I'm not part of them. Yeah, anyway. Yeah.
Right, but that's the stereotype. Like,
yeah.
And so, for me, that's a really key piece of cash fetish and financial domination, is, like, undoing all of those ideas. You can't ask me anything about a fetish without me getting really serious and political about it. But
man, I really did. I can't even make a joke about that.
Yeah.
Yeah, you've come to the right place. Yeah. I think that learning about financial domination from what FinDoms, as they're known, or as they self-identify on the internet, what the thing that I feel that I've learned that, or that financial domination has helped me with in my like non-fantasy life, mm-hmm. Is the confidence to say that I deserve money. And I think that it has helped me with confidence in salary and wage and contract negotiations.
Yeah.
And just because I feel like I deserve the money, and also realizing that that men are socialized to think that they deserve it and then they get it. Mm-hmm. And
Well, and so that goes back to exactly what I'm saying, which is undoing the ideas of what money is and what it means is a key piece of it. But so one thing that is true for me about what you're talking about, negotiating how much you're going to be paid for something, asking for more money for a thing, that is also about knowing that the money does not have equal value to the person who's giving it to you, that it does to you, that money does not have empirical value. That we can talk about, you know, how much money, what's the price of a gallon of milk,
right?
And that's one way we can talk about money and say, oh, it has a real value. But when you're talking about negotiating what your labor is worth, we can say that there's like marketplace pressures or whatever. That's not real.
No, it's not.
And when you're poor, you've internalized all these ideas about like, oh, I'm poor or my family's poor because we are lazy or because we are whatever. I mean, there's so many attributes of class, not least of which is parlance, as we began this show talking about, that are used as excuses for why you don't have money, right? Or told to you that these are reasons you don't have money. And so maybe part of, if we're really talking about being better with money and what that means, maybe one of the things it means is knowing that its value is not intrinsic.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I also think in my early days of sex work that I came to sex work as a very anti-capitalist, anti-materialist person, which I still am. And I think that part of the way that I dealt with that was by feeling like I didn't want to accumulate any of that money, and not that I spent all of it. Or I think actually at the Gates where we worked together, that there was a mug with a cowboy saying, all of my money, I spent all my money on booze and women, and the rest I wasted.
That sounds like you should probably have that tattooed on yourself somewhere.
Probably, yeah. but I, yeah, so I think that that I had internalized a lot of ideas that I didn't deserve to have money, and also that I like wouldn't want it if I had it.
Right.
And I think that I think I did myself a disservice by thinking that if I kept myself in the dark about investing or having a retirement fund or even like putting that money in the bank, that I would be somehow free.
I think it's really hard because money is often the way that we interact with systems that we think of as evil, and that we have to interact with those systems. And then there's all these arguments about whether, like, there's these philosophical arguments about whether the most ethical thing to do is to give away as much as you can to the point of subsistence.
Right.
Whether that's the best thing to do or whether the better thing to do is to accumulate
and
wealth.
Thrive.
To accumulate wealth so that you have more economic power to then better distribute your wealth, distribute it, you know.
Or distribute other things of value, like services or...
start foundations. Right. Like
study things and write books and speak about or make art.
Yeah. Yeah. But I also think it comes back again when a thing that I think you can't forget is that this idea of deserving, that it's okay to have pleasure and it's okay to frivolously spend your money so that you can have some pleasure even when you don't have much money, you know, and that doesn't make you a bad person, but also that you probably deserve to be paid more than yeah. you are. That like that
I definitely do.
I mean, don't we all? But that whole concept of deserving is such bullshit. Like
yeah.
that there is no deserving. Like that's maybe more a better way of thinking about it is that when you are poor, you're told over and over again it's because you don't deserve things. And if you get rid of the idea that some people deserve things and some people don't, it's easy to just ask for more than you think they're going to give you.
Or just to take it.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, to compare money to sex again, I mean, I think that I have had like an inferiority complex around like jobs and money where I'm like, oh, I'm so grateful that you would even give me money. So I'll just take whatever you're going to give me, which feels sort of like maybe some eras in my life where I'm just like, oh, you want to have sex with me? Like, let's have sex because I'm so like grateful to be validated.
Sure. Oh man. And that you got to get past that, man.
I did.
Yeah.
With both things, I think.
Yeah.
No. Yeah, thanks. And now I'm going to give a TED talk about it. I don't know. Anyway. Okay. Lorelai.
Yes.
We did it.
Oh my God. We finally made this podcast that we've been talking about for a year.
Yeah. I'm really glad that we did. I think that this episode will probably change the world. And I'm going to let you go walk your dog.
I know. My puppy needs me.
So if people want to find out more about your work, they should find out only through the authentic, means, which are, Twitter and Instagram, where you are M-I-S-S Lorelai Lee.
Yep.
Not M-S. I have sometimes tried to find you and then I'm like,
it didn't occur to me that those could be confused.
It's fine. I found you.
Miss.
M-I-S-S.
Yep.
Lorelai Lee.
Like you're gonna miss me. I'm not funny.
Or like don't you, miss the opportunity to give your money to Miss Lorelai Lee.
The best thing about talking to you is like I'm really not a funny person. You make me feel like I am.
Oh, that's really nice.
That's not the best part of talking to you. It's one of great.
I mean, I'll take
great joys.
Well, I'm certainly not giving you any money, so.
Oh, no, don't tell anyone. I'm paid dramatic sums for my art.
Oh, yeah, well, right? I know, I even made you pay for your own coffee. Jeez, the fuck is wrong with me? Okay, so those are the places that you are online. You don't really have a website, do you?
I don't That's have a cool. website.
Is there like a place that you would like people to read your writing?
Well, I really should make a website that just like links out to my various pieces of writing. I mean, I have something up on the entitlement from about a month ago that's
the establishment.
Oh my God, the entitlement. I love that. I just
you should
said
actually
that.
Maybe make a website called the entitlement.
Yeah.
You wrote something that was on the establishment recently.
The establishment.
Yeah.
That's funny.
Anyway. I mean, it's an ironic name anyway. But right. So that is like a giant subtweet of Rashida Jones.
I mean, that was my original title, was right. Subtweeting Rashida Jones.
Right, right, right.
Because that's what I am doing all the time on Twitter anyway. Yeah, yeah. It's like my I don't know. Like, at this point, my public persona is really just about rage, but
great. It's one of the deadly sins.
Boobs and rage.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Maybe you should make a website with links.
I know.
To what
I have
writing.
Been saying that. I mean, I own several domain names and I just never built it. I probably should.
I think Squarespace is sponsoring the podcast still. So, you know, I think I can safely endorse Squarespace and tell you to use Squarespace to make it.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. There you go. It's really easy.
Yeah, that's an idea.
Yeah. Cha-ching. See? Look at that. Literally, this conversation is making
product
that Squarespace money.
Placement.
Yeah.
We were
to open up a cool, refreshing bottle of Squarespace. So... That's it.
That's it.
That's
our
you
podcast.
Are. That's where you are. If somebody wants to give you money, how should they do it?
Right now, you can't give me money. I have a Perv Out Pay. Let's product place them too, because they're
what is it
awesome.
Called?
Perv Out Pay.
Oh, I haven't even heard of that.
Yeah. So a friend of mine, Lance Hart, made this. You know, it's a. Come on, fucking
app.
Well, I actually don't know if they have an app, but it's a place where you can give people money.
On the internet.
A payment processor is the phrase I was looking for.
Gotcha.
Yeah. So it's like PayPal or, you know, Square Cash, all of these things, except that all of the – pretty much any other payment processor that you can think of will kick off sex workers. I mean, literally, they wouldn't let me, you know, accept money from my mother. When she was like paying for a ticket for something, and they were just like, no reason, they just won't process
Square Cash.
Yes,
this is, and many people have written about
it. Oh my god, yeah. I can't even get into it. It fills me with rage. I'm just like, just because this is the exact same issue as like covering up that picture in the armory of us fully clothed lying on cash. And I guess we didn't say this on air, but that it was covered because some people who were using the building for another purpose than like for filming a quote unquote mainstream production, they wanted to cover this picture of two women fully clothed lying on cash because they thought it was indecent somehow. And
I mean, I guess it is.
But so frequently the idea is that everything that a sex worker does is indecent.
Right.
That our very existence is
especially being
obscene.
Proud.
But you don't even have to be proud for people to think that you're obscene.
That is true.
And it doesn't, and like, you know, we can, yeah, it doesn't, literally does not matter. It does not matter what kind of sex worker you are. It doesn't matter where you are in the hierarchy. It doesn't matter whether you think what you're doing is better than what someone else is doing. Like, the world still thinks you are obscene, indecent, disgusting, and including the payment processors. Like, so anyway,
Perv Out Pay
is the solution to that. Is a payment processor run by sex workers.
Hell yeah.
Yeah. So I have one. I haven't really set it up. So right now you can't give me money.
I'm sure
maybe
that someone
someday
can find a
you
way.
Can again.
Yeah, I gotta get one. I hope people will give me money. All my wonderful patrons give me money, actually.
I do have Venmo, and actually I have received some monies from that recently.
Well, it's probably more fun if it takes more effort to figure out how to pay you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I hope so.
It's like a scavenger hunt. Or a scavenger cunt. Yes. Anyway, thank you so much for getting on the mic today.
Yes. Thank you for inviting me to come here and discuss it with you.
I'll see you soon.
Yeah.
Bye, Lorelai.
Bye.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.